Hashtag Psychotherapy Unfucked with Mark Fielding.
Hello, welcome to Series 5, Episode 9 of Hashtag Psychotherapy Unfogged. As you know, I'm Mark Fielding, psychotherapist and relationship counsellor and your host. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of welcoming back return guest Renee Magri, pet loss grief counsellor. Renee this time kindly sent me an intro, so I'm going to read her intro. Renee writes, "I'm a passionate people person who has followed my heart and soul to guide and support the wider community with the loss of their animal companions. Losing my forever love, my boxer Buckley, unexpectedly at the age of 5 from a terminal illness, together with the profound grief that followed, led me to being a niched pet loss grief counsellor. Pet loss is a very profound grief that many people struggle with. Guiding and supporting pet loss guardians pre-post loss is something that I'm so dedicated to. My mission is to take away the disenfranchisement that can be attached to pet grief, give pet loss grief a voice, and create a space that allows pet loss guardians to grieve fully and authentically, knowing that they are fully supported and cared for. I'm also very happily married to my husband David for over 30 years, have 2 adult children who I love dearly and are my greatest achievement. Some of my favourite things are AFL, Australian Football League. I'm a big Collingwood supporter, road trips with hubby, listening to some old school tunes with a cheeky wine, great food, spending time with the people I love, and being 100% authentically me all of the time." Okay, that was really lovely, Renee. Nice to see you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for the lovely deliverance of that, and also my gratitude to inviting me back for episode 2. I am so delighted to be here with you. So thank you.
Yeah, really, really chuffed to have you back, you know, and to talk about an area that I'm so, you know, keen to cover. So we'll kind of get into the area a little bit more. But just for our listeners, Renee, that didn't listen to, you know, your first appearance on the podcast, can I ask you just to say a little about the personal experiences that led you to work in this field?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, when, you know, read my intro, losing my beloved boxer, my Buckley boy, at a very young age with an unexpected terminal illness really, really knocked me for 6, to be honest. The grief was really, really profound. And I'd felt a lot of things I hadn't felt before. And at that particular time, I was almost at the end of my counselling studies, and grief and loss had been something I'd been really drawn to. So after his passing, it was something that just organically came to me, and I thought, I'm not the only one that felt and feel this way. And I really, took it sort of upon myself to step into this space of supporting the wider community with pet loss.
Yeah, and again, you know, I'm sure I said this in the first interview, such an important area and so few people working in this area, you know, and pet loss grief is such an enormous loss, you know, for everyone that has ever loved or been a pet loss guardian. So such an important field. I mean, today we're going to talk more around kind of end of life care and kind of euthanasia. So I guess I wanted to kick off and just ask you a little bit. So I guess pet loss guardians, when they know maybe something's an illness, or, you know, there is going to be maybe a passing, you know, in the next few weeks, the next few months, I guess experience pre-anticipatory grief. And I just wonder whether you could just explain to our listeners what that is, and
Sure. So anticipatory grief is essentially grief before a loss. So we can, when there's an impending loss looming, or when we know that something is happening within that space, we ourselves can feel that anticipatory grief. So that's what it means. And the responses can be very similar as grief is post-loss. They're not identical, but there can be similarities. Normally anxiety is a really big thing within anticipatory grief. You know, there's a lot of unknown, there's a lot of angst. And essentially we are in a vortex of a lot of emotions, and Yeah, it's a very big topic, but I think awareness needs to be created around anticipatory grief to know that there is support available pre-loss and to help you navigate those challenges of end-of-life decisions. And, we're going to explore some of that today, but just know that you're not alone. It's not only for after the loss. So when there's a pending loss, we might, like with Buckley, he was diagnosed with a terminal illness and there was a diagnosis and a prognosis. So had to work and with that, and that came very suddenly. So it was like instant anticipatory grief for me personally. So we might have some time. Other times we are faced with decisions very, very quickly as well. So it could be, our companion's unwell, we've gone to the vet, gone through that, and sometimes it's even that day or the next day. Things can happen very, very quickly. So one of my favorite words, Mark, is awareness. I think the more awareness we have, the more opportunity it gives us to work with the challenges that we face, and it is difficult. I know for myself at that time, anticipatory grief wasn't even really on my radar. Like, I knew I was feeling a lot of things, and but I didn't really clearly identify what all of that was. So basically, I look at it as if we can create awareness to have, support around you that's in your lane that you can count on to guide you with all of this. So that's a bit of an introduction there on AG, as I call it.
And I guess with it is really, really kind of different, I guess, with pets, with companions, because from the kind of animal world, because I guess if there's anticipatory loss with an adult, we can talk to them, we know what they're feeling. But I guess with an animal, and with, I mean, just to look at kind of Buckley, you can't talk to them, so they don't know. So, I don't know, it just really makes it complicated, doesn't it? Something's going to go on. And lots of pets will have, I mean, maybe some pets will have cancer, and they'll have care for a long time, and they will have no idea that, perhaps the end is coming, and we will. So, I think it is so important, as you say, to talk about it, because I think pre-anticipatory grief
Absolutely.
is enormous, isn't it? Anticipating the
It's
loss.
huge. It's huge. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety, understandably so. And as you said, we feel such a huge responsibility for caring for our companions in every sense of the word. We are their voice. We make decisions. Making end-of-life decisions is not an easy thing. There's a lot of consideration to go into it. And you brought up a really good your point there is that they don't know. And us as caring for them, we don't, like I know with Buckley, I didn't want to tell him because I didn't want him to know. But on the flip side, there was part of me that was like, oh my God, like I've just made this appointment and this is happening and he doesn't know. Animals very much live in the moment of today. And I think we're going to tap on this very shortly, but I bring a lot of that into it to try to help us work through it.
And I guess the opportunity to be with our loved one, be with our kind of pet, before, at the end, I think is, it's wonderful if we can be present enough. Yeah, and we'll come to that. I mean, this is, I'm going to ask you, and this is going to be difficult for you to answer, Renee, but in terms of the decision around euthanasia and when, I mean, I know personally in my own life with, animals I've loved, I mean, I've agonized over this decision, and I know others do. I mean, what do you see in your practice? I mean, how do people decide when?
That's a really good question and one that is raised a lot within this area. When is the right time? And if I'm asked that question, which I am regularly, honestly, I can't give you the right time. And what the re one of the main reasons of that, I think, because no matter how we sort of go over this and rehash this, I don't think there's ever going to be a right time. There's never going to be that moment in time where we think this is the right moment to say goodbye, this is the day. And that's naturally because we don't want to lose them. I try to approach this in a way of informed like decisions and question asking from professionals such as our vet. We've have that team around us, and in the vet consults, really get curious and ask more about it. Ask about that if you're not sure, ask. Just ask more questions. If you're finding it hard to process and take in what your vet is saying, take someone with you to be your eyes and ears, and ask, write questions down, take a list of questions in. So I think with the actual question of when is the right time, there's, if we're allowed the time to medically get as informed as you can there, get curious and do some, things maybe that I've suggested. There's things like quality of life scales that can come in that are spoken about a lot. I'm not a vet, of course, so I can't, comment on a lot of the medical side, but quality of life scales can be helpful. There's many out there. But yeah, again, I asked to be curious about that too, because something that is normally on there is your companion eating and drinking. And if that's a no, well, then of course that's an indication. But like with Buckley, for example, he ate and drank right up until the moments before his euthanasia. So he never stopped eating. But there was other factors there that, led us to that decision. So yeah, with the right time and then the decision, when it comes to that decision, what I would also suggest is to think about creating an end of life plan. And having that on standby, so it's over there, and that it's there if and when you need it. And again, talk to your vet about that. Talk about the end of life plan. You might want, I'm dipping into my journey with Buckley, but it's a good, I guess, guide that I wanted home euthanasia for him, for example. So as soon if I could, if I had that opportunity, because it's not always possible, but as soon as he was diagnosed, and we got the prognosis, that was one of the first things I explored. So I had that over there, because I had wishes that I wanted to be carried out for him. There was, that's another area too that we can explore. But yeah, just those sorts of things when they're in the mix, instead of when is the right time, I look at it more, it's an informed decision with lots of factors that have come into the mix. And when the actual decision is made, it's an informed decision, out of love, of course, to allow our companions to rest.
Yeah, and that does make sense. I mean, I guess with, being kind of guided by the vet, I mean, I guess the vets will have much more of an idea of how much pain is present, how our kind of pet is getting on, and I really like the idea of bringing someone along, because yeah, I mean, I have to say, I've been in the vet, at these times, and I've had conversations, and because I think the anticipated grief is already there, sometimes it is difficult to take it in. So I really like the idea of taking someone and maybe writing it down as well, so you can come back then and have a think about it. I mean, it's such a good idea, isn't it?
Absolutely. Oh, good, good. Yeah, well, I'm pleased, yeah, that you connected with that. Because when we're receiving a diagnosis, it's a natural response for, of course, there's a lot of shock. So when we're in, shock and things like that, our body, can shut down, and it's like we're there and we can hear things, but we're not processing it and we're not ingesting it, right? If it's possible. The other thing, just I was just thinking then, another idea with your clinician or the vet's permission, of course, maybe that you could record the actual consult on your phone, with those questions.
Great idea.
Do ask for permission. Yeah, because it's not all, you must ask for permission for that. But I'm sure most vets would be, I mean, they're very compassionate people, and they would understand that, it's hard to remember everything. So that's a simple thing that you could do, if because we can't always take someone with us all the time. But if you can't, that's something else that could be something to think of.
I mean, again, a really, really good idea to record it, I guess, with a vet's permission. When I kind of wanting to bring in one of the questions, I guess one of the questions that came from your community, in anticipation of you being on the show, it's a big question. I mean, to be there or to not be there, at the euthanasia. Could you maybe say a little bit more? I mean, that's a big area, I know. I mean, what are your thoughts? What do you see?
I'd like to share some of that. It's a very, very sensitive emotional conversation to have in terms of being with your companion in those final moments. And you know, majority of us are, as hard and as painful and heartbreaking as it is, we are there. Sometimes, though, it's not always possible. And there can be a couple of different reasons why. If a pet parent decides that they can't be there, just bear in mind, you know, for the people around that person, that there could have been, you know, some previous trauma or previous things going on for them that don't allow them emotionally to be in that space. Bear in mind too that to decide that they can't is so hard for that person, and something that they wouldn't take on lightly, and something that they will carry forever. So whilst you might not agree with that decision, you know, people are entitled to their own opinion. Please just be mindful that you're not that person. And that person has got their own thoughts, feelings, emotions that they carry. So yeah, there's that space there. Another I'll come back to the other, but I just wanted to tap on if there's some if a pet parent is not able to be there. I want, if for your audience and listeners, if there's anybody listening that is either going through this or supporting somebody going through it, I think please know there are ways that we can have that connection. I'm going to give a couple of tips here that might be helpful. So again, I'm not a vet, but the euthanasia itself normally is in two parts. There's the sedation and the relaxation of our companion to get them in a space of calm. And then normally the actual euthanasia unfolds after that. So it might be something like in the sedation space that the pet parent is able to make their companion comfortable, make sure they're in, you know, got their favorite blanket with them, something, you know, that touch, feel, sensory. It could be leaving something of theirs with them, and that could, you know, and I a possession of you know, the pet parent with them. And so it's actually touching them and they've got that there. The other thing that could be done too, and this could be done being present or not being present, is putting some really bright lipstick on and just inside of their ear or their paw or any other species as well, you know, a kiss. You know, that imprint of that touch that they're taking that with them. So those, you know, there's quite a few more, but that's just a couple of ideas there that can happen in that space. So yeah, I'm hoping that helps in some way. The other part is too, in terms of not being there, you know, we go on holidays, we go away, we have our companions taken care by family and friends or pet sitters or boarding kennels, etc. Now, sometimes, unfortunately, there can be an unforeseen circumstance or accident that happens, and we're not able to be there, and a decision has to be made. So, you know, that is obviously, again, another conversation, but there's that side too. You know, on online or things like that, or offline or two, you know, it's a sensitive topic, but I just hoping that those. That having this conversation that we're having now can just give another perspective and sometimes to try to look through things through a different lens.
Yeah, and it is so true what you say. I mean, we're all different, and somebody with, with a history of trauma, for instance, like you say, you might just find it absolutely too overwhelming. I mean, if somebody, I mean, with
Yeah.
the kind of scenario around, if your pet is being looked after while you're on holiday, if that happens and someone can't be there, just practically, they're maybe not in the country or something, can you say it? That I'm guessing that really complicates the grief process, does it? I'm guessing people maybe if they can't be there, rather than choosing not to be there, feel a lot of guilt over that.
It absolutely can add another dimension and layer to that, to the grief, and particularly in what you just said within that guilt space. But I'll always say that all corners of our grief can be supported, and things like that. If you go away on a holiday, you've taken the utmost of care to make sure your companions were taken care of when you're not there. And something that's, if you knew that that was going to happen, well, then of course you wouldn't have gone away, or you would have made other arrangements.
No.
So, one of the key things is that it's unforeseen. And sometimes, no matter what we, in our life, we're always caring and loving and supporting the ones that we love near and dear. And we do our very best. And unfortunately, as hard it is for me to say, despite doing that, sometimes bad, really sad, heartbreaking things can
Yes.
still happen.
Yeah.
So with that, it's about processing it all and just really being individualized with that, with the
Yeah.
circumstance of that pet loss guardian that's going through it. And it's a hard one to carry, but I will always say, we can support every corner of what someone's going through.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people need to kind of reach out. I mean, I think I'm just drawing on my own experiences of kind of being there at the end, and goodness me, I mean, it's so difficult, isn't it? I mean, it's real intimacy with your pet, isn't it? To be there, to be with anyone, in fact, when they pass. But goodness me, it is, it's such an incredibly difficult space, isn't it? And then the kind of leaving them, if it's been done, if the pet has been, if it's been done in a vet, or even if it's been done at home, the space that is left where the companion inhabited, I mean, is really, really kind of, I mean, it just sits there, doesn't it? You've got all, I mean, if it's a dog, for instance, you've got the basket, you have all the toys and everything. Do people then, I mean, do people, I guess that people are different, but do people kind of reach out to friends sometimes and maybe get friends saying unhelpful things? Because I guess people that haven't been a pet guardian maybe don't always understand the depth of the grief.
To everything that you've said there. In society, there's quite a lot of grief unawareness or grief literacy, grief illiterate.
There
We
is.
don't have enough conversations around grief, and this is pre-loss and post-loss. And I think naturally, one of the biggest reasons is grief is hard, and grief makes people feel very uncomfortable and very vulnerable, also very out of control. We could be the most, quite co very confident in our life per se, and got everything together and feel like we've got everything on track, but throw grief in and that just does a 360 degree turn. So our family and friends and network around us that see us going through this, and we're particularly talking about euthanasia and making end of life decisions. Some things do come in that are, make me flinch. Things like, at least they won't be, anything that starts with at least they won't be suffering anymore. Another one is they're going to be in a better place now. You'll be okay, just give it a bit of time. I find some of the things, I'll use the example of at least they're not suffering anymore. Now, whilst that might feel like quite a helpful thing to say, the important thing to create awareness about is to really meet that person where they're at. So what is unfolding here is they are about to lose one of the greatest loves of their life,
Yeah, it's so true.
who has, been there in the good times, the not so good times, has just, look, I could talk about that for such a long time. They're the true, they're just their soul connected being. And they're about to step into something that is heartbreaking, something that they could be thinking they just don't even know how they're going to survive this moment. It's so traumatic.
Yeah.
And then we have often, it's always normally a well-meaning person around us say, well, at least they're going to be in a better place now. That doesn't really acknowledge what that person's going through. And the person that's going through it, of course, does understand that the decision is made to end the suffering of what their companion is going through. So they subconsciously know that that's the reason why. So, sort of stating the obvious things, they're just not normally helpful.
Right.
A couple of things that, like, it's hard for people around us going through this to try to find the right words to say. And I
Deeds,
just
yeah.
want to really remove the stigma around that, because we don't, what are the right words? There are things that are, probably more socially acceptable and might be received better. If we have just the awareness of, all the things that I said before, but sometimes we don't have to have the right words. It might be something like, I know this is so tough for you. Instead of saying to somebody, it's going to be okay, you're going to be okay. In that moment, that's probably not going to be received that well, because I'm going through
No.
this and you're saying, you're going to be okay. Well, I don't feel okay right now. So just something like, this is really hard for you. I'm here. If you want to talk more.
But unhelpful thing, yeah. So I guess really, just really, really being there with the person, just almost like a kind of counseling model, mirroring back, their grief, and the unhelpful things. Yeah, I guess people mean well, don't they? And these are the things that, that they say. These are the things that lots of people say. But it is really difficult, isn't it? When, I mean, and I'm a therapist, when people close to me lose people, it's so difficult. You're wanting to really comfort them, but obviously they're in a
Well,
place where they can't be comforted. I mean, they're just feeling the trauma and the grief, aren't they? You just have to sit alongside them.
well, that's exactly right. And there can be naturally be like a fixed mentality, like how do I fix this for this person? So if we can't fix this, it's about witnessing and allowing and as you said, just walk alongside that person. So if we just, I think a lot of the time, Mark, what pet loss guardians want is the acknowledgement, and they want their feelings and their thoughts and feelings to be validated and not minimized and not pushed away. And this is where the disenfranchisement comes in. So if you can, if I guess to sort of like summarize this, if you know of somebody that's going through this or about to, acknowledge and allow the two A's. And if you could do that just in a non-judgmental space, just giving that pet loss guardian the freedom they need to move their way. That's often a really good start to try to help support somebody going through it. All those, the, you know, that pool of narrative that we think is helpful often isn't. It might be for some people, but some people connect with things differently
Yeah,
than
true.
others. But generally speaking, I guess from sort of where I sit, because I, have the privilege of being in, very close with people that are going through this. I know that often it's not received well, but most people want that acknowledgement and validation. And we don't have to agree or anything like that. We might have differences, opinions, and thoughts and feelings, and that's so okay. But just be mindful of this is their journey, and this is their story, and this is their loss, and that is very solely connected to them, because it's, it's such an individualized experience.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I mean, probably the most unhelpful thing I've ever had said to me was, get another one. That was when I lost a lost a dog called Maisie. And people, I mean, this is someone who has never really, who's never had a pet themselves. They've been a pet guardian, and I think for people that have never been pet guardians, I think it's difficult for them to understand just the depth of the bond, that we have with, with our pets. I mean, can I just ask you, Renee, this must be really difficult work for you. I mean, when you're, I mean, this is a vocation, I know, but but when you're sitting with somebody who maybe has just gone through euthanasia, been there at the end, which is, is good and bad. I mean, it can be quite traumatic, can't you? The memories of it, but a lot of people want to be there at the end for their pets. I mean, how do you cope as a counsellor? I mean, listening to so much grief. I mean, what's your, yeah, I mean, how do, it's a lot, isn't it? It must be really overwhelming for you at times.
Well, thank you for asking. It definitely can be very overwhelming. The old code of practice, what I preach, I am very mindful of being in tune with my emotional space, and I listen to what that's saying, and doing a lot of the self, help inner work things that we
Yeah.
all, talk about. So I make sure, I want to be in the session space as the best version of myself. So it's really important for me to be able to achieve that.
Yeah.
And I, after each session or before going into sessions, I really am intentional and mindful of whether it's a debrief myself after the session
Yeah.
or whether it's before going into a session. I have, practices and rituals. And one of my favorite ones is I'm the biggest lavender oil fan going around, and I love the energy that that creates. So I just do simple, like, rituals like that. I get my lavender oil burning. I love affirmation cards, get that going. Set an intention, and all those sorts of things. So yeah, it's important for us as, as therapists and counselors to be mindful of that. I also do see it very much as a privilege where I sit to be invited into
Yes.
a space that is really hard and challenging for that person, and for them to reach out for support. I always really acknowledge and commend my clients for doing that, because to talk about this is hard. It is not easy.
Yeah.
The session space is often a very emotional time.
Yeah.
But I really like to create that energy of letting that person know that, we are listening to their grief, and we are going to take it at their pace. And this is for them. And I really like to, right from the get-go, to bring that reassurance. And often I can see within the energy of my client that it's almost a relief somewhat that they can just
Definitely.
be authentically them,
Yeah.
talk about, their loss and pre-loss, and or if it's post-loss, whatever is going on it for that person, and just be them and not have any outside noise that can be,
Yeah.
very hard to navigate with grief.
Yeah.
So that's what I do my very best to do.
Yeah, and the space you offer is so invaluable. I mean, there's so few people working in this field, and pet loss grief, is so enormous. I mean, so many people, experience that. I mean, for your clients, whether it's pre or post or whatever stage in the grieving process they are, I think having the space with you, with somebody who really, really understands and can hold their grief, I think must be absolutely invaluable. I mean, it really, really is a safe space you offer. To probably a lot of people that maybe don't even have, people have different ideas, don't they, about pet loss, and people don't, friends don't always connect with it. I mean, I wanted to ask you, just moving around a little bit, could I just ask you to say a bit about your community? Because you don't
Oh,
you well you
sure.
have a whole community, don't you? And you
I
sell blogs,
do.
which I read, which are great. Could you just say a little bit around your community, and also how people can get in touch with you? Obviously, we'll have your links with our social media as well, but yeah.
Of course. Thank you for asking as well. So yeah, my community, I reckon we've probably got about 10,000 odd, people there now. So I just feel whilst it's normally a sad reason that somebody joins my community or reaches out to me and all my different things that I have, it is sad normally, but I'm really pleased that the support is there. For that person. So yeah, I have a couple of different things. I've got my pet loss support group, which is a beautiful community of like-minded people. That my pet loss support with Renee Magri group. So that's there, and I put as much as into the group as I can. But research, I think you could back me on this, Mark, that research does say that being with like-minded people and being with community really can be impactful and
Definitely.
helpful with the challenges of life. So
Definitely.
that's there. And as I said, I'll put as much into the group as I can, and they're just really lovely group of people. So I've got that. My social media, I really try to infuse in that just as much as support as I can within, the platforms. I really try to mix it up a bit. So, if someone, your audience was to follow me on social media, just know that it's just packed full with as much support I can share in video format. I share tips. I share a whole lot of stuff. So I just think the more that's out there, the more I like people just to have choice, what private sessions might be, what someone connects with, but they might not be for everybody. So whilst the levels of support are different, of course, but no matter what support I'm offering, I want my audience or my followers or clients just to be able to have takeaways. I takeaway of some type. I know, myself, because we're real people too, aren't we, Mark, outside of what we do
I
professionally. So
think
we have
so.
thoughts and feelings.
We do.
We have thoughts and feelings like everybody else, and
We
sometimes
do.
need to reach out for support. So, we all follow various things and reach into our own support things. But I know, some of the most impactful things might have been one, a tip I saw in a social media post that really resonated, and I took that away, and it was really helpful. So, or a blog. My blog library, I'm pleased to say, is growing. I've got, yeah, quite a, I love doing the blogging. I try to do two a month. So, like, if your audience, my link to my website will be in your show notes. Jump onto my website and just go to my blog tab. There's, I think I'm up to about 16 or 17 now, which I'm growing. So there's all sorts of different topics on there within pet loss that's there. So yeah, I've got all of that, or everything is on my website. So you'll find I've actually got a free pet loss handbook as well that I created. So somebody, to jump into my subscriber community, you'll grab a 24 or 25 page handbook, things that are accessible right now. And that's what I want to, it's that, my blogs, they can be accessed right now. So, and that's good, because sometimes, particularly with pet loss, we, reading a blog, say, could be something that can just help you to take, put one foot in front of the other. And that's one thing, I talk about too. I might share a couple of little tips if we have time on that with euthanasia and anticipatory grief, because that present moment is important.
Yeah, and I wanted to come back to that. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I subscribe to your blogs, and if anyone has experienced pet loss, wants to kind of join a wider community. I mean, you offer so much, don't you? And the sense of community alone must be so helpful for people that are experiencing loss, have experienced loss in an area where perhaps it is really not understood, by all others. So I mean, you do offer something really, really wonderful. I mean, I'll be almost out of time, but I wanted to pick up on the tips for, I don't know, being with your pet companion, I guess during their passing, but also during end of life care. Could you maybe say a little bit more about that, what people can do?
A couple of tips in the pre-loss and the anticipatory grief side that I wanted to share. And one of my biggest ones is really bringing your focus to the present moment
Yeah.
and the here and now, and really exploring ways on how to support that. Because whilst you're caring and supporting and loving your companion, you need that too, and you need that
Yeah.
support. So the here and now and the present moment, when we step into we're thinking about, even the euthanasia, or when we start to get ahead, that's gonna, probably try, create a lot of feels. So focus on another big tip of mine is in this space is try to bring your focus on to things you do actually have control over, not the things you don't. You might not feel like you have, anything that you have control over, but we do. And things like, end of life plans, we talk about things like bucket lists and things, all of
Yeah.
that sort of stuff. There are plenty of things, your wishes for the euthanasia, how you want that to be,
Yeah.
that like bring your focus into what you do have control over. So that's something I really want to convey as well. With the actual euthanasia and the euthanasia itself, one of the things I really talk about for pet loss guardians is to channel as much energy as you can into your love. And your love will always continue to love you and guide and support you. Now, what our companions know in that moment, in that very moment in time, is you and them and your love.
Yeah.
So when the actual euthanasia process is starting to happen and the preparation of the actual euthanasia I'm sharing about here, we want to, if we can, just be mindful of that and just know that that's what they feel. Your sensory, what you touching them, you hugging them, you making them comfortable, kissing them, being with them, that's the energy that they're feeling.
Yes.
And I, this part, I'm hoping it's a really big takeaway for your audience. And when the transition is happening, I'm a firm believer that there's like a connection, a revolving connection of love. So there, when the euthanasia is happening and they're entering eternal rest, that is what they feel and that is what they know. So that is what they're taking with them,
Yeah.
right? And the other side of that is they're also leaving them your love. And that is that beautiful gift of energy. And that mark is something that I truly hold on to with absolute,
Yeah.
I'm trying to find a word that just correlates to the enormity of
Yeah.
how meaningful that is, but that
Yeah.
beautiful love that rests in your heart is the catalyst to your healing. And
Yeah.
I draw so much from that and bring that into the work that I do to help pet loss guardians carry this heartbreak with them.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, Renee, that is absolutely beautiful. And I find myself feeling really touched by that. And I really agree with you as well. I mean, I just to share, this is something slightly different, but I follow someone on Instagram, and they had a dog, and the dog was having end of life care, and the dog loved the beach, talking of bucket list. And they had Instagrams of the dog going to the beach, and the dog wasn't as mobile as it perhaps used to be. It was quite an elderly dog, and just loving being on the present moment, being on the beach, playing ball, with their owner, which I thought was, absolutely beautiful, really. So yeah, so really resonate with everything you said. I just we're at the end now. Is there anything that you would like to say that I've not given you the opportunity to before we
Oh my
finish?
goodness. Oh, look,
It's probably so
I'm not
much,
really sure. Like, again, yeah,
Yeah.
there's so much, and
Yeah.
maybe episode three, maybe down the track again on
Yeah.
another
Who
topic. But
knows?
I'm
Yeah.
just, really humbled to be invited back, and I want to thank you so very much for creating awareness and allowing the space here to just talk about this much needed support. So I really thank you for inviting me, and I really enjoy our time together and what we can share about. There is a blog, just quickly on, I thought I'd very quickly mention one of my blogs, and all my blogs is talking about this very topic, sort of anticipatory grief and end of life decisions. So that's just a little something there for your listeners if they jumped onto my website. There's probably a few more things in there that we've run out of time to share here today.
Absolutely. And as always, all of our listeners can find, all of the links to everything that Renee offers on our social media sites, along with the podcast on all of the different kind of podcast platforms that we come out. So I just want to, I just want to, A, Renee, thank you for the important work you do in supporting people, pet loss guardians going through grief. So important. And also for coming on the show again. It has been really, really a joy to interview you and to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you again so much. It's been a joy too. And just many thanks. It's been really good. And I really hope there's a lot of takeaways for you, for your audience. It's been really great. So thank you.
And I just want to thank Renee again for coming on the show. Such an important area, pet loss, end of life care, and pet euthanasia. And so few counsellors and therapists kind of working in that area. And again, Renee offers so much. I mean, she offers, obviously the one-to-one counselling space, which, as we said in the interview, is so invaluable to people experiencing. What can only be described as the complex grief around losing a lifetime pet companion, something that is often can be dismissed by others, people who have not really experienced that bond as a pet guardian, and something that is generally kind of misunderstood. I mean, grief, I think, is clearly a very, very complex area, and I mean, certainly in the West, it's an area, grief and loss, that that is hidden and people don't like to talk about, people find it difficult to talk about. Really interesting what Renee was saying around people with the best intentions saying things like, at least their suffering is over, and looking at more helpful responses, i.e. just really validating the pain of the person that is going through the grief. And I would also really encourage listeners to check out Renee's community and her blogs. I mean, I subscribe to her blogs, and they really, really are fantastic and such an invaluable resource to anyone that has ever experienced pet loss grief and pet owners generally. I always admire counsellors that work in the area of loss, sitting with people experiencing deep, deep loss, is so important, providing the space for the person who's experienced the loss, but also can be very, very difficult work, I think, for the counsellors with, such enormous feelings of loss and grief in the room. And, Renee talked about, how she looks after us herself, and obviously for anyone that works in this profession, self-care and, having strategies to look after ourselves is incredibly important. I'm so glad to have Renee back on the show. I mean, as I felt at the end of our first interview, and we could have gone on for hours, really. I mean, there's so much to talk about, in this area. We had a few glitches. The internet signal wasn't the best, but hopefully, the audio will be fine. I mean, listening to the audio, as we kind of recorded the show, it all seemed absolutely fine. I'd also suggest to our listeners that perhaps they check out also the YouTube video. I've started putting up some of the videos of our interviews for the end of season four and season five. So, yeah, if you are interested in seeing rather than listening, then check out the YouTube channel, Mark Fielding Psychotherapy Unfogged. And in a few days, you'll find the interview there. Still within our subject for series five of relationships, I'll be interviewing a guest shortly who's going to be talking about relationships with neurodivergence. That should be a very, very interesting show. I have a guest who, is a lot to say, about that area, both from personal experience and from being working actively in that area. So that should be a good one. That's going to be, I think, probably second week of April. And as I always say, please, if you are listening to the show and you are enjoying it, or you're watching the show on YouTube, please make comments, please subscribe. Subscribing helps us in so many different ways. Some of the research out there says that lots of people listen to podcasts and don't subscribe. But if you are enjoying the show, please do subscribe and please do make some comments. I mean, as I always say, Joe, and I love the comments. And if you have any ideas about guests we should interview or subjects that we haven't covered that you would like to hear us cover, then we'd be really, really interested in hearing that. And just again, thank you to all our listeners. We wouldn't have a show without you. Thank you to Joe for all his hard work behind the scenes. And look out for our next interview around about the 9th or 10th of April. Season 5 is really developing into a great season. We've had some brilliant guests. And once again, thank you so much to Renee for coming on again. A really, really important interview. And I hope our listeners will agree. So many useful tips and strategies for dealing with, the very, very complex and intense pain of losing a pet and going through the euthanasia process. So as I always say at the end of the show, do look after yourselves, look after each other, and look after the planet. And I'll see you in a few weeks on our next episode. Thanks for listening.
Hashtag psychotherapy.